Hey, Who fans, welcome to the Big Blue Box podcast. My name's Gary.
My name's Adam.
And we're at episode 111.
One day, I shall come back.
Oh dear, we are in trouble, aren't we? I've reversed the polarity of the neutron flow, so the TARDIS should be free of the force field now.
I have the advantage of being slightly ahead of you. Sometimes behind you, but normally ahead of you.
But the trouble with time travel is, one never seems to find the time.
Change, my dear. And it seems not a moment too soon.
Unlimited rice pudding, etc., etc.
A meteor storm in the sky above us was dancing with lights. Purple, green, brilliant yellow, yes!
I'm the doctor, by the way. What's your name?
Rose.
Nice to meet you, Rose.
Run for your life.
It's more like a big ball of wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey stuff.
Just remember who's standing in your way.
Look at the eyebrows. These are attack eyebrows. You can take bottle tops off with these.
Hey, Who fans, and welcome aboard the TARDIS for episode 111, 111, 111, 111.
Three strikes,
yeah. Three pins, whatever you like. I'm your host, Gary, joined as always by the Geek's Handbag, Mr. Adam. Mr. Adam, I'm gonna put that in early because I think it was last week, the week before, I totally fudged the name up.
Oh, yeah.
I think I called you the Geeks something else.
Yeah, you did.
What was it?
I don't know now.
It was something. So I'm getting it in early.
The Handbag of Thieves or something. No, I can't remember. But it's funny, actually, because someone went back and watched one of my really old videos the other day where I was saying of all the different names that I'd come up with before I decided on the Geeks Handbag. And they were like, oh, I really liked, and I forget what it was now, this one you came up with. Can I use it? And I was like, yeah. Sure,
that's well, like really
clear. But obviously there will be a fee. But by all means use it. But the Geek's handbag. I haven't got the handbag with me, but perhaps I should bring it down from now on for when we record. Just have it sat on
maybe.
The table.
Yeah.
It's falling apart. Actually, I gave it a trim with the scissors yesterday because it's like strands coming out of it, and I've put a few new badges on it. I got a new Blue Peter badge. Put that on it. Got a Blake 7 badge, thought, come on, got to have a Blake 7 badge. Yeah, so I put some new badges, give it a trim, and it looks a bit ropey, to be fair. Because I was thinking, do I get a new one? But it wouldn't be the same, would it?
Some essential maintenance.
It's a bit like the TARDIS prop. It'll keep going till it literally collapses.
And then they'll replace it.
And then replace it, yeah.
Yes.
With a nice shiny new one.
Indeedy. So the Geek's Handbag... Check out Adam's stuff on YouTube and Facebook. I need to get that in early.
Yes. Oh, thanks. Thanks very much.
I get that scathing look over Skype once more.
You're tapping away, sending you a secret message.
Yeah.
Plug!
What the bloody hell are you playing at, you flipping plonker?
Actually, what was it? One of the videos I forgot, because you know I always say at the end of my videos now, I do return the favour. I always say at the end of every video. And I also do a weekly Doctor Who podcast with Gary Cole, the Big Blue Box podcast. And there was one video recently where I forgot to do it and didn't realise to the edit. And I thought, oh no, wonder if Gary will spot that. I haven't put it on. It'll suddenly just never give me another plug again. I forget which one it was. But yeah, I was like, oh, he'll see it and he'll be like, right, that's it.
Well, now the cat's out of the bag, there's quite a few videos where you haven't mentioned the podcast at the end.
No, there isn't. There's one. I know
There's a few.
Well, probably before we started recording. Yeah, there's loads.
No, there's a few.
No.
But I'm not going to hold it. It's fine. It's totally cool.
I'm sure to my memory there's only one because I remember watching editing it and thinking that's the first time I've forgotten to do it because I normally put the little caption up at the bottom as well. It's like an extra 5 minutes of my time to put that caption on. I was like, it's gotten to do it.
Yeah, whatever.
Yeah. I shan't bother anymore. Next time I'll put it wrong. Don't forget to listen to the Green Blocks Blue podcast. The Dalek Blue Green podcast.
See what I have to put up with.
Yeah.
Just constant.
Go and get a Drashig.
Just before we
kicked off recording, I was looking at the Doctor Who merchandise page and I saw that the Drashig has gone down, has been reduced because it just keeps going down every week, that Drashig. It's now $9.99 for the third Doctor set. Get one.
It's the hand puppet Drashig, isn't it?
It's the hand puppet Drashig, and it comes with Omega and an Auton in a massive box. It's like three figures in this ridiculously big box. And it's now $999, which is a bargain. It's a great figure. I told somebody recently that you didn't like the Drashigs, and they literally gasped. They couldn't believe it when I told them.
Their gasp was truly flabbered.
I was like, did you not hear the podcast where Gary was just saying how rubbish they are? And he's like, I've never met anybody who doesn't like the Drashigs. I was like, yeah, well, Gary doesn't like them because they've got 10 eyes, or whatever it is, 5 eyes, and they can't see.
Yeah.
Which is your reason for hating them, isn't it?
Yeah, and also they just look terrible.
I love them.
They look like stalks of broccoli walking around with eyes sticking out of their head and ridiculous. Yeah, no. I can't get into the Drashigs.
No.
I would have done if they weren't so bigged up as much throughout the entire story. Mm. They were sort of described. And who was the guy that, like, the traveling entertainer guy? What was his name, the character name?
Oh, I don't know. He's from, I always think of him from Heidi High, but I can't remember his name. Yeah.
Yeah, because you know we're great with names.
Yeah, aren't we?
I can't remember his name. And whenever he's talking about the dreaded Drashig, you know, he's got this wave of fear come over him. And, you know, and then when we see him, it's like, oh, that's a Drashig. You better move quick. You better run for it. Because they move at, what, 0.3 miles an hour. And they got all these eyes that can't see anything. All they do is roar. So, yeah. You're not going to win me over, dude, on the Drashigs, I'm afraid.
Don't dish the Dashig.
The Drashig. Oh, dear. What have you been up to, mate? Anything decent?
Apart from getting on the lash and feeling like...
apart from feeling a bit like, ropey this morning.
A bit ropey this morning. And feeling a bit like Matt Smith. Out of my way.
Started in your way.
What have I been up to? Not much. I obviously... end of the month has just gone, and which meant payday, which I was quite excited about because there's a few convention tickets. So I thought, right, payday, I'm going to get them bought, so I haven't got to worry about them selling out. So you know, I got my 10th Planet one. I already told you that, which is good. One of the ones, I don't know why I didn't just get this because it was so cheap anyway, but it was just in my head. I was thinking I'll get everything at the end of the month. There is a, I'm sure you wanted to go to this, an evening with Adric in Soho.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Did you see this now? I really, really wanted to go because A, it's Adric. B, it's Matthew Waterhouse. C, it's in a pub in Soho that I used to go in a long time ago. And I just thought, oh, that'll be funny. He's going to like sit there and do it like live commentaries to episodes and a book signing and whatever. And I thought, oh, that's brilliant. And it was like £5 or so, ridiculous. Why I didn't get a ticket, I don't know. Anyway, yeah, end of the month, right. On I went to get it, sold out. And I was like, oh, no.
The dreaded time period.
Why? Because I really, really wanted to go to that. So I was a little bit disappointed. But it's all been made up for because I did manage to get a ticket to the Power of the Daleks premiere at the BFI. And, mate, I cannot tell you how lucky I was. And I don't normally have this luck. They went on sale at 11:30 on Tuesday, wasn't it?
That's right. Yeah.
And I'd set a little reminder because I knew I was going to be at home. So I didn't take the day off especially for it, I hasten to add. But yeah, I was there dead on 11:30, refreshed my page, went to the buy button, and it came up and all the seats were the same colour. So I thought, oh, brilliant, loads of seats. No, it meant they were all gone because I was like clicking on them. I was like, oh, no, it's not that they're all available. They're all gone because, of course, the BFI members get the priority before they go on general sale. So I was like, oh, I don't believe it. And I was clicking through them. Went to the middle section, nothing. Went to the side, nothing. Went to the other side, nothing. Was still on the left-hand side bit. Refreshed the page, and one seat come up. I guess somebody had, like, selected it, and then for whatever reason, not, and whatever.
Yeah.
So one seat come up right at the very edge. And I was like, right, and I quickly got it and literally bought it. And even when I got the confirmation, I couldn't believe I'd actually got it.
That's awesome.
It was just like it just popped up because I refreshed the page. And I kept going back, and it just came up. Sold out. So I was so lucky and so pleased because I really, really want to go to that. So I did have a bit of good luck, and I'm really looking forward to that one.
Me.
Yeah, I know you, because I messaged you before, didn't I, saying, are you by your computer? They're about to go on sale.
I was as well. Had the page open. And yeah, my luck wasn't with me.
Luck to be wasn't honest, with me, yeah. They just literally must have had about, well, no seats left, you know, 3-4 seats, whatever. There was nothing. I was there dead on 11:30.
Yeah. I wasn't too bummed out because I fully expected them all to be gone. So it wasn't like I was like, yes, there's going to be loads, you know, to snap up. I fully expected to load the page and there'll be a message saying they're sold out. So I wasn't too bummed because I expected it, but I'm very happy for you, mate. That's really cool.
Yeah, cheers. Yeah. I must admit, I am pleased. And as I said, that's what I mean by when I say I kept checking the confirmation, because I just couldn't believe I'd actually got it. I was like, fan, look, it's sold out already. It's now 11:34. It's sold out. I was like, have I definitely got it? Because it was like saying buy again or something after I'd confirmed it. And I was just really worried that I'd, you know, not got it. So, yeah, very much looking forward to that. That's been sort of the highlight of my week, really. I haven't really done anything else. I haven't had a chance to watch anything other than our review ep, which I, do you know what? This is, I really had to find the excitement, but I really didn't want to watch this week's because I just remembered really not liking this episode. And I really put it off to the last minute, which is a terrible thing to say. But so obviously when we get to review, we'll see if I still feel the same about it. But yeah, this was one story that I really wasn't looking forward to watching, I have to be honest.
I hear you.
But I don't know. My opinion might change. We'll find out later. So that's been me, mate. What about you?
I came down with a bit of man flu a couple of days after. So at the weekend. And you know, typical man flu. I'm on the sofa with a blanket and I've got all the essentials needed so that, you know, I've got a mug of Lemsip, got a bottle of water, some tissues, got my phone there, I've got the TV remotes, you know, everything is in arm's reach. So I don't have to get off the sofa because I'm feeling awfully sorry for myself, you know. Can you, darling, can you get me some soup or something? That's really going to help me out. Yeah.
Got visions of Nat throwing a packet at you.
There's no sympathy.
It's a tomato soup, make it yourself.
Exactly. There's no sympathy in our house. We just get on with it. So I had a bit of man flu, I was on the sofa, and I'd watch the our review episode, which I really struggled to get the motivation to watch it.
Oh, you were the same.
Exactly the same as you. I was thinking, oh, I just can't be, you know, I'm not in the mood to watch it. I just cannot. Ooh. But I thought to myself, nope, this is the podcast. We've got to do it. The fans know it's coming. It's got to go on. And like you, later on we'll find out, you know, what the deal is with that. But as I always do, when I've watched one Doctor Who, I can't stop there. So I thought, right, I haven't watched any Tom for a while.
Oh.
No Tom has been on the TV for a good few weeks now. And I normally watch, you know, I watch, you know, quite a few classics throughout each week. So one of my faves had to go on, and that was A Brain of Morbius.
I knew it was going to be that. About to say to you, I bet it was The Brain of Morbius. Yep. I don't know why. I think it's just because I was speaking to somebody yesterday about The Brain of Morbius, first time he'd ever seen it. And I was like, "What? It's brilliant." And it's a good one, that. We reviewed it, didn't we?
We've
done that one, haven't we?
Yes, we reviewed it quite highly, in fact.
Yes.
But yeah, it's just one of those episodes where I'm just glued to it throughout every episode in that story. And it's just, you know, sometimes when you're feeling a bit down or you're feeling ill or whatever, you just want sort of comfort viewing, you know, something that you're familiar with. You want to play it safe, stuff that, you know, makes you feel good. So, yeah, Brain of Morbius was on.
Great.
And that's about it. I did order a couple of bits, but they haven't arrived yet. I've got something on its way today. It's not arrived as yet. So Peter Davison's new book will hopefully be popping through the letterbox any moment.
I'm really looking forward to getting that. I saw Adam, the Ultimate Whovian, and one of our listeners got it a couple of days ago. We met Peter Davison at a book signing, and he got a lovely signed copy of it. And I really want to get that. So I'll be looking forward to seeing, or hearing rather, what you make of it, whether it's good.
Yeah.
And if it's anything like his Doctor Who interview, it'll be great. Doctor Who magazine interview, I mean. Yeah, it'll be great.
And while I was on Amazon, you know, they do that thing where they recommend a bunch of other stuff based on what you've looked at. So their sort of algorithm must have, you know, figured out, oh, this is a Doctor Who guy, so let's recommend a load of Doctor Who stuff. And they were selling the A5 TARDIS notebook.
Oh, quite right, cheap. Yeah.
And I thought, oh, yeah, I'll have that, because I remember using up my old one quite a while ago. So I ordered it. That's on its way. And then what did I do? Looking for something else, I find two of them. One that I've already started and one with the wrapper on. So I'm going to have three.
Oh, brilliant.
So there we go.
There's a competition prize for the future then.
Yeah, so if anyone wants a Doctor Who notebook, a TARDIS covered notebook, let me know. Let us know and you can have it. You can have one. So yeah, that's been my week. Fairly uneventful again.
I see our competition winner, Alex Kingdom. Kingston. No, wasn't it Alex Kingdom?
Kingdom, yeah.
Got our T-shirt, got our his prize this week.
Yes, he got his
Rocking his big blue box T-shirt. Looked very cool.
Yep, his goodie bag. So he would have got a different Doctor Who notebook, one of those really cool, you know, like the old retro comic style covers. He got one of those. He got big blue box pen and some comics, some other bits and pieces. So we had a good little goodie bag.
Yeah,
and a t-shirt.
I want one of those t-shirts. I was thinking the other day, he's got a t-shirt. I haven't even got one of them.
Nor have I. I haven't got one either. No.
And I was thinking one of our first competition winners has got a very limited edition, because he got a big blue box t-shirt with the old design on it. And I think that was probably the only one printed.
Oh, yeah.
Who was that? Will.
Oh, that was. Ooh,
terrible with names. Will. If you're listening, Will, keep that in the wrapper. Yeah. It could be worth at least £5 in the future.
Well, here's the thing. Initially, I had ordered about six of these t-shirts, the new ones.
Oh, yeah.
But I had such a Barney several times with the printer. I ended up just cancelling everything, sending the ones I ordered back because they were in terrible quality. I'm not going to mention who it is, but yeah, I ended up sending them back. And then as a kind of goodwill gesture, if you like, they said, well, we've managed to fix them, so do you want them? And I was like, absolutely not. This has gone on for weeks and I'm unhappy about it. So they sent it anyway. You know, they sent through. Luckily, it was the size that Alex had asked for. So,
yeah,
you know, sent it off to him. Admittedly, I did leave it a couple of weeks. I did forget. So I had the parcel sat there. I must have put some stuff on top of it or over it, whatever. But he's finally got it. He's finally got his stuff. But
I just got visions of you opening the box and there being a misprint. Like, the printing's perfect. Oh, these look fantastic. The Small Blue Box Podcast.
Yeah.
Or the limited edition.
Yeah, the BIC Blue Box Podcast or something. But no, just the print on the T-shirts was terrible. Oh. Like, I couldn't have sent it out and I wouldn't wear them either. So it was just a few weeks of to-ing and fro-ing and arguing. Well, you know, that's what you asked for. Well, yeah, but they're crap.
Yeah.
No, they're not. Yes, they are. We'll take some pictures. Here you go. And so you know the usual rubbish you have to go through sometimes. But they are on the way. I've said that for a little while now, because we've got a new website coming. That is definitely coming soon. Oh. And that's going to rock.
Another one? You've only just redone it?
No, it was last year.
Was it? Oh, yeah. Golly. Time flies.
So the new website's coming. It's got the new logo on there. So when that launches, which will hopefully be soon, then I'll put a link out for, you know, for you guys can buy the t-shirts and all that jazz.
Mm.
Yeah.
Good. I'm looking forward to having one.
Me too.
My partner said I've put on so much weight, I probably need to sew two together just to get into one.
Maybe it has something to do with us sitting down on a sofa watching
Doctor Who.
Quite a lot of Doctor Who each week.
Yeah,
that might account.
Probably
for some
doesn't
of it.
Help.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Anyways, I feel
so you're ill. I'm hungover.
It's going to be an interesting show today. I can feel the TARDIS itching to land, though.
Yes,
she's just itching to get down and do some news. Shall we do it?
Let's do it.
Some clever people, you know, working for the production team on Who.
Mm.
Very clever peeps. And I'm pretty sure they scooped something last year as well, if memory serves.
Yeah.
But anyway, the the BAFTA awards that that happens every year has a slightly smaller affair, which happens in Cardiff each year, and it's the BAFTA Cymru Awards. And it's no surprise that because Doctor Who is, thankfully, touch wood, still made and produced everything in Wales, it's sort of homegrown talent, if you like. You know, it's like close to home. It's on your doorstep, you know, should I say. And there are two sort of effects companies that handle all of the practical effects and the special and visual effects on each episode, which I have done for the past few years. So the first company is Real SFX, and they do all of the visual stuff that you see that's actually happening on screen on camera. So explosions and props that are, you know, all that stuff they handle. And then the special effects, all the some of the CGI and all that stuff that you see happening is done by a company called Milk VFX. And those two guys together have scooped a BAFTA Cymru Award for special and visual effects, titles and graphics. And that is for the season 9 opening episode, The Magician's Apprentice.
Ooh.
So round of applause and let's pop some champagne for those guys. And I'm pretty sure the Real SFX guys bagged something last year as well. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I got a feeling they did. Yeah.
Yeah. And if you don't follow those guys on Twitter, Real SFX, then you really should do, because they often post little sneak pics of things that the BBC Twitter account doesn't post. Which is always good. And there's a guy there who's like a really good ambassador for Real SFX. I think his name's Danny
Hargreaves.
Danny Hargreaves, that's the guy.
Oh, he's a dude, isn't he?
Yeah, he's really cool. So congratulations to those guys. They've scooped another one. And long may that continue for it to all be done in Wales and locally and all that stuff. So, good stuff.
That is good. Yeah. In other news, a little while back, we talked about the Kickstarter fund for the Doctor Who pinball machine from 1992. And amazingly, I mean, this seems to have happened quite quickly, but the digital version of it has now been released. I think they are also planning, are they planning to do the actual physical thing as well? I can't remember. Off the top of my head now.
No, it's
just going to be digital. Okay, yeah. Well, it's now released, and I do remember they had other things in the pipeline as well. But this is great. I mean, for anyone that remembers it, it's got all the classic Doctors up to Paul McGann facing the Master. And yeah, you can get it for Google Play, iOS, Mac Store, Amazon, and one I've not heard of. You probably know, Gary, you're a bit more technical. What's this? Ouya. Ouya.
Yeah.
You know that one?
Yeah, it's just an app store, similar to Amazon.
Okay.
But yeah, this was, you say it's happened quite quickly. We spoke about this campaign in January. And I'm not sure if you did. I can't remember, buddy, but I remember backing this one.
Yes. Yeah.
So I pledged some cash to those guys. And they have sent a few emails out periodically over the last 6 months, I guess. But it's great to actually see it now in the wild. If you just jump on YouTube and do a search for Doctor Who Digital Pinball, or do a search for the company, I can't remember what the company's name actually, who did it. But it's out on all those devices now, and it's going to be coming to consoles soon as well. So PlayStation 4, Xbox One, all that stuff. Will be coming pretty soon, but it looks great. I don't know if anyone's seen the gameplay footage on YouTube or anything, but it looks so good, and all the classic retro sound effects are there. It's great, and they've actually got a new one coming out as well, which has got Missy, starring Missy.
That's it. Yeah, I knew they'd got something else in the pipeline.
So that looks pretty good. It's just great. It's just great to be able to have something fun and quirky to play.
It's quite iconic, isn't it? As I said, it's one of those things that when you see it, it just looks so retro. Even though some of the Doctors look quite funny. I mean, Peter Davison looks like more like Tarzan than actual Peter Davison, doesn't he? But it's such a cool thing. I think Farsight Studios is the company that released it. Yeah, they've done really well, and I'm glad fans have got behind this because they managed to raise $56,000, which was enough to purchase the licensing for it and to get the actual game developed. So they've done really well, actually, to get this done and out. So, yeah, very, very good news.
It's great, isn't it?
Yeah.
Very good. Right, next up, we have some updates for you on the upcoming Polarity Day, which we spoke about last week. So if you don't know, the Doctor Who Appreciation Society, or DWAS, which you'll see on their website and various other places, they are holding an event to celebrate John Pertwee and his role as the Doctor and so on. And that is being held on the 23rd of October. And we told you that in order to get tickets, you had to send off a stamped address envelope and all that jazz. All that stuff is the same. But they have made a couple of changes. So first of all, they've managed to bag a larger auditorium at the Wimbledon Theatre in London. So they've got a much larger space now to hold the event. And that means that there are now loads more tickets up for grabs. So when you were applying previously, you could apply for up to 2 tickets per application. But now you can apply for up to 4 tickets, which is good. So this also means that there's a much, much larger, a much bigger chance of you actually getting a ticket to go, which is good. And due to the larger venue and all that stuff, they've now upped the guest list as well. So Adam's busy mate, John Levine, is on the list, as well as Bernard Holly. I'm not aware of this guy, but apparently he was the Axon leader.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And also the society's president, Colin Baker, is now on the list as well. So he'll be there talking about John Pertwee, I'm assuming on a bit more of a personal level, and all that stuff. So it's, you know, what was going to be a great day of Doctor Who has now been upgraded to an awesome day of Doctor Who.
Yes, it so, does sound really good, this.
Yeah, it was already looking good, but now, you know, it's looking even better. So if you haven't applied for your tickets yet, I would urge you to do so. So if you just head over to the website that they've set up for it, which is just dwasonline.co.uk/polarityday. All the deets are on there. If you just scroll down a bit, it's got the address to send your envelopes off and all the rest of it. And we will hopefully see you there.
I'm just thinking now you can get 4 tickets. It means if we win them, we'll be able to take our other halves. Can you imagine your partner and my partner sat there watching The Claws of Axos? They will love it. That'll be fun.
Yes, I think I already know the response from my wife. I think that's, yeah. Not repeatable on air.
I once dragged my partner to see the Dalek Invasion Earth 2150, you know, the Peter Cushing movie, on the big screen. It went down rather well, actually. But they also showed the first movie, which didn't go down so well. I remember kept nudging him, wake up, you're missing it.
The missus, she really likes some modern Who, but she draws the line. She just cannot get into classic Who. She doesn't see the charm and the overall, you know, coolness of classic Who. She just,
I could just imagine her reaction to those leotards they wear. She'd probably bring the house down with laughter when they walked out.
She would, and she did. When she saw me watching this a couple of times, she just absolutely fell about laughing, as she does quite frequently when she sees me watching classic Who. Polarity Day. It is, on a serious note, it is looking very, very, like a really good day. So we will hopefully see you guys there. And that's going to do for the news. We have got one bit of merch. So, oi, get in here.
Merch corner. Merch corner. Merch corner.
I don't know whether to be impressed or disgusted.
It's a bit rubbish, but it's pretty. It's very pretty.
The War Doctor.
Yes.
The War Doctor is back. He is back for another audio adventure from Big Finish. And I know that a bunch of you guys really enjoy the first couple of volumes from the War Doctor range. And a new one has been released today. However, if you're listening to this on the Friday that this goes out, yesterday. So the 6th of October, a new volume titled Agents of Chaos. And this is a three-parter, which is becoming quite popular now at Big Finish, I've noticed.
Yeah.
Doing three parts instead of four, which can be pretty cool. 3.1 is The Shadow Vortex, 3.2 The Eternity Cage, and 3.3 Eye of Harmony.
Ooh.
Now that rings a bell.
It does.
That rings a cloister bell. crikey.
Ding, ding. Ding, ding. Boom, boom.
Boom, boom. Yeah, so I have not got the War Doctor stuff from Big Finish. Have you?
I have. I've got the first two, and they're very good, actually. I did enjoy them a lot. Very highly recommended. This was supposed to come out last month, actually, but it got delayed. I think there was a problem with the pressing or something.
Okay.
So they brought forward Doom Coalition 3 and put this one back, but it's already here, already out today. So that's great. I did get Doom Coalition 3. I haven't had a chance to listen to it yet, but apparently it's very good. But yeah, this sounds great. I mean, I really enjoyed the first two War Doctor installments, and this one looks great. It's got one of my favourite people in it, Jacqueline Pierce from Blake 7.
Blake!
And she's just brilliant in it. She's just so good with John Hurt. So yeah, very much looking forward to hearing this one as well.
Very cool.
Blake!
And if you are wanting to get this, I've noticed that on the website it still has the web special price of £20, which they normally do on pre-orders.
Yeah.
So it's worth jumping on there immediately if you're after this one.
Yes, before it goes up.
Yes. No more merch news other than the flipping trash eggs that you can pick up for $9.99 at Forbidden Planet, if you're so inclined.
The brilliant hand puppet.
Crikey. Anyway, that's merch.
Yeah.
Right. I was gonna do this in song.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, just warming up the vocal cords.
Yeah, I've got a decent excuse now because I'm still a bit coldy, so my throat's not. You know, there's no chance of that. What are we gonna do this week, buddy?
This week. This week it's the blimmin' rings of blimmin'. No, it's the rings of Arcaden. However you say it.
What do you want to see?
Something awesome.
Back at 10.
Can we see it? Up close.
Oh, you okay?
Have you seen her?
Who?
I'm Mary Gallal.
The Queen of Years.
And the vessel of our history.
What's happening? Is that supposed to happen? Doctor?
You don't walk away.
Mary!
Saber, I'm armed with a screwdriver.
Grandfather's away.
Oh, that sounded exciting. What episode was that from?
Keep the gloves up for a while, please. Right. Okay. The Rings of Akaten was out on the 6th of April, 2013. Written by Neil Cross, directed by Ferran Blackburn. Ooh. And sees the Doctor and Clara land on a series of rocks, I guess, which are circling a big planet, which turns out to be a big soul memory story eating monster, which the populace view as some kind of god. And every generation they pick a young person to sacrifice themselves, essentially, to said quote unquote god. But this time the Doctor's having none of it.
Yeah.
And he puts a stop to this alien soul-eating thing and kills the entire population while doing so, which we'll come on to in a little while. So the Rings of Akaten. Now, we said, you probably guessed from if you listened last week, that we weren't over the moon about having to dig this one off the shelf stick it on and give it a watch, because like many of you, I suppose, not all of you, but like many of you, when this went out and I watched it on a Saturday evening, I was left a little bit meh afterwards, I must admit. I did think, wow, that wasn't great. But has our opinion changed?
Ooh.
What did you think on a rewatch, dude?
Well, very much like you, on transmission, I sat there and when it finished, I went, what the blimmin' heck was all that about? And then I remember watching it probably a month or so after. I just thought I need to give that another watch because I really didn't get that episode. So I gave it a rewatch about a month after it was aired and really didn't enjoy it at all. I was just sat there thinking, this is awful. And then obviously, you know, some time has passed. When did you say it came out? 2013? So we're now 3 years since it aired. And I watched it yesterday. And like you, I was just dreading it. I thought, oh, God, I've really got to, oh, I don't want to watch this. And I still just don't dig this episode. I must admit, I probably enjoyed it out of the three times I've watched it. I probably enjoyed it the most out of those three times because I just kind of sat there and enjoyed the visuals of it. And I tried not to get too hung up on the things that annoyed me about it, you know, like all the singing and the fact that it takes forever to get going.
Yeah.
I just thought, just, you know, to try and put all your preconceptions away. And I kind of just found it an easy enough watch, but at the end of the day, I really don't think it's great. Yeah. Right. It's an easy enough watch, but I just think, you know, it needed a bit of a rewrite. I think I find it quite slow.
Right.
You know,
right.
Like I said, you know, in that trailer you just play, there's loads of action. It sounds like it anyway. And this, it just really just plods along. And we'll get onto this, I'm sure. But the whole Clara thing, just there's so much of it. It drives me mad. But yeah, we'll get onto it as we get further in. And just lastly, before we come over to you, I know you hate the poster for this. You talked about it last week and I couldn't remember it, but I've got it in front of me now. Because they, in Series 7, they were sort of doing these like film poster style promo images for each one, weren't they? To make it real blockbuster. And you described this as, what was it? Indiana Jones, wasn't it?
It was like...
in style.
It was like a sort of Indiana Jonesy style, the Goonies, Aladdin sort of mashup. It's all right, but it's just a bit.
I couldn't picture it at the time when you were talking about it, but now I've seen it, I know exactly what you mean.
Yes.
Yeah, it's horrible. Yeah. The poster, but yeah. So overall, maybe it's not as bad as its reputation, but I just don't think it's that great either. So, yeah, very middle of the road for me, this one. What about you?
Right. Well, I've seen this twice. So I watched it when it went out and I watched it again a few days ago. And when I watched it on the rewatch, I was like you. I was like, oh, this is going to be bad. This is going to bring back memories of what the heck was all that about. But I really liked it.
Oh, really?
On a rewatch, yeah.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
Yeah, my opinion has been sort of swayed over to... Don't get me wrong, I'm not, you know, it's not up there in any of my... Sorry, Colin, in any of my lists or anything like that. But yeah, I thought it was a really good watch.
See, I love it when that happens. And that's kind of what I wanted. It's really nice, isn't it, when you think, oh, here's an episode. I think the one that springs to my mind is... what's the Agatha Christie one?
Unicorn and the Wasp.
Yes. See, I hated that when that was on TV, and yet on a rewatch when we reviewed it for the review, I loved it. And it's so nice when that happens.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, it didn't for me on this one. But I'm glad it did for you because I think it's good when that does happen.
Yeah. I just really enjoyed the watch. I didn't come away thinking, wow, that's like a modern classic, or that's going to beat any of the, you know, the episodes that we've rated quite highly or anything like that. But I did think, you know, a good indicator for me when I'm watching Who is if I reach for my phone or not to have a quick look at Twitter or Instagram or something while I'm watching. And I didn't on this, which is good because I do reach for my phone you know, if the story's not really grabbing me, I'm still sort of watching it, but I'm just sort of checking my phone at the same time, which indicates that it's not, you know, I'm not engaged with the story. But this one, nope. I actually really liked it.
That's good, because there was a major backlash after this aired. I remember the newspapers loved it. They really picked up on it. You know, there was all these articles, Doctor Who fans say it's the worst episode ever made and all this blah, blah, blah. And I don't think it's anywhere near as bad as its reputation. And I think judging by a lot of our listeners' comments that we're going to read out later, I think a lot of people have found a lot in this to like on a rewatch. Because I didn't understand it, what was going on the first time either. I remember like zoning out a lot. Like you were saying, you didn't check your phone. I remember the first time watching this, just like, I had no idea what was going on, really. I was like, why is this girl keep singing? You know, why have we got this brilliant looking monster in a box that's doing absolutely nothing? What is going on? And I think on a rewatch, you kind of get more into it and understand what's happening. But I don't think it's that clear. To begin with,
okay, well let's jump into the story a bit then. So before we do that though, let's talk about visually. I thought this looked stunning.
It does look really good. It really does.
There's a couple of scenes where when the Doctor and Clara are on one of the rocks where the monster was in the glass cabinet excuse me, and the whole backdrop to this story is basically set in outer space, isn't it? You know, you see like the nice big, you know, orange and pink, purpley, you know, clouds in space. And it's all that typical sci-fi looking stuff. And there's a couple of scenes where the green screening isn't that great because you can see like a sort of halo effect around them, like a white line around stuff like that. But with the exception of that, and maybe the you know, when the monster sort of materializes as, you know, as the big planet, you know, at the end, it looks a bit like a pumpkin.
It does, yeah.
With the exception of that, it looked beautiful. I mean, the opening scenes where Clara's dad is walking down the street and it's got like these close-ups and like these out-of-focus shots of like the gate closing and the leaf falling and all that stuff. I remember when I watched it a few days ago thinking, this is just beautiful to look at, like the cinematography part and the direction and stuff.
I would agree with that. I thought that as well. I did think it looked very nice. Yeah,
really.
I think the effects were done by, it was a different company back then, wasn't it? Wasn't it The Mill?
The Mill, yep.
Something like that used to do Doctor Effects. And I have to say, I think they were better. Definitely think they were better with the CGI, because there is quite a lot of green screen going on in this episode. But thankfully, like you said, for the majority, it works really well, I think, most of it, because it is so visually nice what they're actually doing in the background, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is good. So direction-wise, I mean, it's a little bit flat at times as we get into the story where there's not much going on, because all you see is the Doctor and Clara, like, you know, looking out into space a lot or looking up at the monster, and then the camera cuts back to them looking out and stuff like that. So, but, you know, otherwise it looks really nice, I thought.
It does, yeah. I think, because I was going to say, I think the direction is very good in it. It's strange because it is quite slow paced as well. And and as I said, I don't find the storyline particularly well told in terms of being easy to understand, if you know what I mean. Because the actual idea behind it is quite a simple one when you break it down.
Right.
But I don't think it comes through that clear. And I don't know if that's due to the direction or not, but yeah, visually it's beautiful, and like you said, it does start off really well. Although I don't think a leaf blowing into your face would necessarily push you into the middle of the road. I did think that was a bit silly, but it does make for a nice scene, and I do like that bit of although the actor does ham it up too much, I do like the bit where he's saying, you know, if it wasn't for this leaf, we would never have met. This is the exact leaf in the exact right moment. I thought that's quite nice, because you know, that is very true. All these tiny little things do sort of shape our lives, and we don't even realize, like, every single thing we do has a, you know, has a counterpoint. So it's I thought that was a real nice sort of start to the episode.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that part of it then, because the opening few minutes is all about Clara's parents, how they meet, and, you know, they have, you know, Clara, and she grows up, we see her as a little girl and so on. I thought the you are right, the guy who's playing Clara's dad. He does ham it up a little bit when he's going through that speech, but it is quite relatable, because if you are a romantic and you're in like a lovey-dovey mood and stuff, then that is quite relatable to a lot of people, because it's that,
yeah.
There's a concept, isn't there, about that stuff. I've forgotten what it's called, where it's something about if a butterfly flaps its wings in Central Park, then, you know, that has an effect on somebody's life 100 years. You know, what's that? It's called something, the something theory, or the something effect. There is a
butterfly effect.
It's probably that. Yeah.
The only reason I'm thinking that is because there was a film called it. And I think maybe it's the butterfly effect. I don't know.
Yeah. So it's relatable, because when he's going through, like you say, this leaf had to fall at a certain time and all that stuff. And it is quite heartwarming, you know, to know that that particular leaf was kept in the book. Clara's got it, and her mum has passed down, you know, the story behind it, you know, and that's used to defeat, you know, the baddie at the end. So it's quite a nice, heartwarming story from that respect.
Yeah. And it's one of the things that at the time I didn't get and thought was ridiculous. It's like, what? She's killing the planet with a leaf, or whatever. She's not killing it, but she's, you know, what's going on here? And yet, on this rewatch, I thought, actually, that's really quite a nice idea. Actually, the leaf's full of all the, you know, adventures they didn't go on, and you know, so it's almost infinite. And I thought that's quite a nice idea, actually.
It is, yeah. And I think that was one of the things that a lot of people went balmy about when it came out. Is like, why has Doctor Who come to this? You know, it comes down to the companion killing the monster with a leaf.
Well, that's what I thought on a first watch, yeah. But when you actually look into it, it's quite a nice idea.
Yeah. But I guess, you know, when you're sort of taken up in the moment, especially when it went out on TV, you're like, you probably, you know, you don't see past the obvious sometimes. You have to give it a rewatch, I suppose.
It definitely does deserve a rewatch. Absolutely.
And I really like the actors playing Clara's mum, dad, especially Ellie, Nicola Shan. I thought she was really good. And there's a saying, isn't there, that Clara inherited, and she says it once in the story. I think it's, "Oh my stars."
Oh yeah,
and we don't hear Clara say that anymore, do we?
No. That's a shame.
I thought that was like a nice sort of family saying, if you like. You know, a lot of families have got their own nicknames for people and sayings and all that stuff. I thought that was quite cool, but we never hear her say it again.
No, that's a good point. I thought that as well, and also the book that she's carrying. She's got this nice book of all these little keepsakes, I assume. And we don't see that again either, do we? I think because she's sort of carrying it around a lot in this one. But I don't think we see that again, or doesn't get mentioned. I suppose we don't really need to, but I did say earlier, it's very Clara central, this storyline. I can forgive that a bit, actually, because it's only really her second proper story, isn't it? We had the Snowmen, but she's kind of a different character than that. Bells of St. John came before it. That was like her first proper story, and then this is her sort of first adventure, so I guess I've got to give a bit of leeway there, because I did find the amount of Clara in this quite annoying. But I suppose, you know, looking back of when this aired, I suppose that's quite important, really, because you're still introducing a new companion. So I have to take that into consideration, really.
Yeah, and I think maybe because we're very early on in Clara's involvement in the show, we haven't yet got to that point where the moth's just flogging a, you know, dead horse.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's still
quite
fresh, I suppose.
Yeah, it would have been then, yeah.
Yeah. She is in it a lot, which I think sets the precedence for the rest of the time that she's on the show. It's like the moth just loves the character of Clara. He just can't get enough of her. And it's, when you look back on it, we should have, well, you wouldn't have thought it at the time, because, you know, we can't see into the future, but it was definitely a case of, wow, she's in it a lot. And then that was just the tone for the rest of the time. It was like, always about Clara, wasn't it? And she was in it a lot. And
that's a good point, actually, because yesterday when I was watching it, I was like, oh, here we go. Clara saves the day again. I mean, as if like the doctor's knowledge and that wouldn't be enough for that thing. You think about all the stuff the doctor's done. And I was like, oh, here comes Clara with her blimmin' leaf saving the day again. But you're right. Back then, it probably wouldn't have been so much because, yeah, we haven't had her do it over and over and over again. Yeah. So, yeah, I did groan a bit yesterday. But no, I suppose I've got to be a bit more forgiving thinking mm-hmm. about when it went out. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. And we also get introduced to this name that the doctor gives Clara. He doesn't actually call her the Impossible Girl. He just calls her Impossible, doesn't he?
Mm, that's right, yeah.
That also starts the ball rolling for her status and her purpose in the show.
Mm.
Because he is confused, isn't he, about why she's there. And her existence, because she was, you know, alive and well several hundred years before. So, and obviously
it was quite a good mystery at the time, wasn't it? I remember thinking, yeah. Oh, it's intriguing. Didn't know it was going to be dragged out so much and and the resolution. But I remember at the time thinking, okay, yeah. And she was in the Dalek, wasn't she, as well? Because that was a nice surprise, I thought, when Clara popped up in Asylum of the Daleks. Because that was, I don't remember that being leaked or anything. I think that was quite a nice shock.
Is that the souffle?
Souffle girl.
Because, yeah. So that, at the time, that was quite intriguing.
Mm.
But like you say, we didn't know. It would be dragged out and repeated as many times as it was.
Yeah.
Across, you know, 2.5 series, I guess. But yeah, Clara, I mean, going back to her parents and stuff, it was a good setup for the story, I thought. And it was cool to see the Doctor sort of back in time, or back in time of Clara's current character.
Mm.
it's difficult to describe because it's so timey-wimey, because she essentially just jumps in and out of the Doctor's time stream, doesn't she?
Apparently, yeah.
And so what would you say? Not incarnation, but her then...
Persona. Time, no, whatever. I don't know.
You know what I mean? So that was quite good. And
it was good to see Clara's parents, wasn't it? Because this is the thing with Clara. Her character was so written so inconsistently that half the time we don't know what she's doing. One minute she's a babysitter, then she's a teacher and she's living with a nan or something or whatever. And I don't know. There was so much inconsistency with her, but I kind of like the simplicity of this. It's just there's her parents, her mum died early. And that's it. And we don't know how her mum died. We never go back to that, do we? So, no. But I kind of liked that. It's just very, you know, so much more straightforward than what happened later on in the series and you know, the future series as well. So, yeah, it was just quite nice to see her parents, I thought. And I'd completely forgotten about that, actually. I was quite surprised when they popped up and I was like, oh, it's Clara's mum and dad.
Yeah,
and mini Clara and young Clara. There is a scene, isn't there, where she looks really young. I didn't, because it's so short and I almost blink and you'll miss it, but there is a scene where they sort of make her look, I'm not talking about the kid, I'm talking about Jenna Coleman. They sort of make her look about 5 or 10 years younger just for a split second, I think. So I thought, that's really well done.
Oh, I don't remember that scene.
No, well, it is so quick and I've never noticed it before. But there's just a scene, I think it's when the doctor's hiding behind a tree, maybe in the graveyard or something, Clara looks up and she just, it's very subtle, but they've just made her look, you know, about 5, 10 years younger.
I remember now, yes.
I thought that's good.
Yeah, because there's a wipe, isn't there, as the scene transitions into the next one. It's sort of, it was well done, actually. Now to come to mention it, it was, and yeah, what's the company, was it The Mill, wasn't it, that was doing the...
I miss The Mill. Yeah. I think they did some really good stuff.
Mm. I was quite into the whole Clara and her parents and all that stuff. I think it was a good setup to the story, and it kind of explains why the Doctor was going back in Clara's time then, because he's just trying to figure out why she's there. She shouldn't be there, basically. Mm. So that was pretty good. And then after that bit's done. The Doctor's like, it was really cool, actually. He was like, where do you want to go? There was a bit of writing there, which I really liked, which is so true. And
I know,
she said, have you ever been asked what your favorite book is? And of all your favorites, you can never think of it at the time. And I thought that was really good. It was just such a small, simple little thing. But I imagine that would be the case. If you've always dreamt of traveling, you know, to these cool places, whether it be here or, you know, whatever planet it is or whatever, you know, if you've always dreamt about it, and then you, if anyone was to ever ask you, you know exactly what you would say. But then if reality smacks you in the face, it's like, well, where do you want to go? You're like lost for words. So I thought that was a great little bit to have in there. It wasn't overdone, you know. She wasn't like, oh, I don't know, and all that stuff. She was, I thought that was really cool. And then we end up going to Akaten.
Yeah.
Or the Rings of, should I say. What did you think? Because I remember when this first went out, and lots of people were comparing. So when they arrive on Akaten, or one of the little planetoids that are circling this big planet, which is the monster, that a lot of people compared it to the cantina scene in Star Wars, where, yeah, you know, where Luke and Obi-Wan get there and there's all these, like, a raft of different type of aliens.
Doesn't like you. I don't like you either. Yes, I love that scene.
So it's meant, there was a lot of comparison there, because when they arrive, they're walking through the streets and stuff, and it's a very similar vibe where they get there, and it's just a whole plethora of different species and languages, and everything's, you know, it's just meant to be like a lived-in world of all these different aliens. Mm. And I remember at the time thinking, this looks just rubbish. It just looks awful, you know. The set is tiny. You know, they've tried to, you know, make all these different aliens. But when I rewatched it, I was thinking, this is, I actually really like this. It's, you know, if you appreciate it for what it is. And there's the scene as well where they go and see the little girl, Mary, singing. And the camera's like got a big wide angle lens on it. And you see, like, you know, the auditorium of all these different aliens. And there's quite a few of them. They must have spent quite a bit of dosh and a lot of time making up each individual alien. So I actually really like, what did you think of that then? Because I remember the Star Wars comparison and thinking at the time it was rubbish, but.
Yeah, it's funny actually, because absolutely the same as you. I remember thinking at the time, oh dear, oh dear, oh dear. Like it almost felt like like they were sort of parodying it. That's not a word, is it? But you know what I mean? It just felt like they were sort of trying to do like to the cantina scene and failing. And yeah, I don't know why, because I also really liked it yesterday. I was loved the fact we were sort of brought into this world and there was all these crazy creatures roaming around. And I like the bit where Matt Smith gets excited because he spots it. And I wrote it down because I knew I wouldn't remember. An Ultra Manta, I think he calls it, that robot thingy. And But it's good because they don't, you know, I'm assuming they're quite sort of, they've tried to incorporate as many different species in there as they can. And we only get to see them very fleetingly on screen, you know, but it's just enough to create a world that, like you said, seems to be buzzing and in full flow. And yeah, I also really liked it on a rewatch and I was quite surprised. The only thing I didn't like was the dog barking.
Doreen. Like,
not so much the creature, but it just them talking by barking. I just don't know why. It just doesn't appeal to my sense of humor. I was just like, oh god. But yeah, apart from that, I thought they looked really pretty good actually. Yeah,
it was quite funny though when the doctor's tickling her under her little chin and
yeah, nearly comes away from the actor's mouth. I noticed.
Yeah, the dog barking thing. Yeah, I'm not sure on that still. I wasn't sort of taken with it when it first. You know, when I first saw it, and I wasn't. It's all right. It's
one of those things that will make some people laugh, and maybe grumpy old so and so's like me. I just groan, but I'm sure a lot of people find that scene funny. I just don't. But apart from that, I really did like it. Yeah, I liked all the different species, robots, aliens. Yeah, really good.
Yeah, it was good. That's really it, isn't it, in terms of the story? Because That's just where the story is set. It's either out in the street, the market stalls and stuff, or it's out in the wide auditorium bit that looks out across to the other planetoid with the pyramid on it.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's your lot, really, in terms of scenes. And the only other place we see, I'm not talking about when they're on Earth, they're in like the Clara's parent scenes and all that stuff. I'm talking about when they're on the the planets.
Yeah.
It's either that or it's inside the pyramid, which we only really see like a bit of a room, really, don't we, with the mummy inside.
With the door, yeah.
So once they get there, that's it in terms of where the story takes place. They just very... they sort of... Now, this is where it's one of those things in Who which we encounter time after time, where you sort of have to decide at some point in the story whether you want to sort of go with it and sort of suspend your belief about physics and stuff like that, or if you know it really just gets to you and you're like, they can't do that. So when they jump on the space scooter thing, whatever it is, the hover scooter bike thing, and they're racing across space, I mean,
it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean,
it's one of the things that really annoyed people when it first aired, isn't it? And it still annoys me, I won't lie to you. When I watched it yesterday, I was like, oh, come on. That's just so awful. But then again, like you said, does it really matter? Probably not. But it does. It does irk me a little. I can't lie.
Well, that's
it just
thing.
Seems a bit tacky. It's just a bit tacky.
Yeah. And it's not done too badly. It does look a bit ropey in some of the... and they're asked to do this sort of classic pose as well when they're on this thing where they're sort of leaning over.
Yeah.
And that, you know, and what, you know, dude, you're going in a straight line. You know, there's no need for all that. But you do have to decide.
They have just put on like a space helmet or something. I think we just needed some sort of silly throwaway sort of explanation of how they were breathing in space. Anything.
They just put
this in your mouth. It's like an air valve or anything we could have put in there. But they just jump on it and fly through. Yeah. It like you said, it's not worth getting hung up on, but it is a bit silly.
Yeah, it is. And that's what I mean. You sort of have to, well, it's not really a decision that you make halfway through, but I think when you very start watching, it's probably a thing to have with you whenever you're going to watch Doctor Who, is do you just leave that stuff at the door and just go with it and enjoy it? Or do you get hung up on the details about, you know, the laws of physics and all that stuff? But yeah, I mean, their sort of choice of transportation between each planetoid is a little bit questionable. I won't lie. I'm a little bit, like you said, just stick a helmet on or something or whatever.
Well, couldn't the Doctor just jump in the TARDIS and nip over there? I don't know.
Just nip over. I'm just popping out.
Just nipping over to see the beast or whatever it is.
Yeah, the beastie. Yeah. What are you going to do?
But I do like this kind of world that we're brought into, and I do like the Doctor makes a reference that he's been there before with Susan, because Susan very rarely gets a mention in Doctor Who, does she?
Hardly ever. So
I liked that, because that's quite early on, isn't it, when they first land. He's like, oh, I came here with my granddaughter once or something, and I thought, oh, that's nice, because I can imagine. I like that. It automatically conjures up an image of an adventure we haven't seen, so that was nice. Just a nice little line.
Yeah, you can imagine William Hartnell and Carol Ann Ford, just in a black and white version, and how they would do that, you know, how they would make that possible.
And also William Hartnell's Doctor probably wouldn't bother it saving the girl. He'd say, no, 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 it's part of its tradition. Let her die. Yeah.
You can imagine. Oh, that's just got a great story written all over it.
I'm going on a spake by Susan.
My dear. It's just got... Oh, that just sounds amazing now that we're talking about it.
You can imagine Susan sort of tapping on the shoulder. Doctor, shouldn't we save her? No, quiet, child, quiet. Enjoy the music.
Oh, that's awesome.
They need to do that.
That's Big Finish for you right there. and then we have the other part of the story. So Clara sort of befriends this little girl, doesn't she, Mary? Queen of Years, and it's her job to sing a lovely song, the Long Song, I think she calls it, over to the other planetoid with the pyramid, so that the guy over there can sing back and it's all harmonious and, you know, appease their god, who turns out to be this horrible mummy looking thing. So that sort of kicks off, and then we're over there because, now this is a bit that I wasn't sure of both times I've seen it. So she's going through the song, you know, she's belting it out, all sounds lovely. But then there's a point where everything starts to shake and rumble, and you think to yourself, right, well, has she got it wrong? Because we don't know. Did she get it wrong? Or is this just how it happens? Does every single time whoever is appointed as the Queen of Years start singing? Because that's what this monster feeds on, isn't it?
He's just an alarm clock, I think they call him, don't they? So it's almost as if, right, that's her time up.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I don't quite get that either.
Yeah, so I wasn't quite sure if she got it wrong or was just her time to sort of, you know, be gobbled up. So she gets it wrong and then we're over that section. And I thought, did you say that the monster in the mummy in the glass cabinet looked cool?
I thought he looked pretty good. Yeah. Yeah. I kind of wanted him to do something because there's such a big build up to him breaking out. And it's quite good, actually, the way he's going mad in that box.
He's going mental.
He's going absolutely mental. You're like, oh, it's, you know, God, he's going to really kick off when he gets out of there. And then he just does absolutely nothing. And I just thought, oh, that's disappointing. Because there's a good shot of Clara, close up of Clara's face. And he like appears smashing against the window right behind her. And I thought, yeah, he looks quite scary, actually. Yeah, I liked the look of him. Mm. Were you not so enamored, not so impressed?
No, I thought he looked really good.
Yeah.
Like the makeup and stuff, I thought it was great. And I, even though it's a mummy and you know, they all assumed that he was dead, you knew, didn't you, that he was going to get up and do something. Yeah. He wasn't just a model. But I thought it was really well done, the way he was going just berserk and smashing the glass
Thought it was great. I thought he was sort of could probably be scary. That's why I was so disappointed he doesn't do more, if you like. Another instance of a great looking sort of monster that does absolutely, I keep going to swear and I mustn't swear, does nothing. I also love the look of the, I think they're called the Vigil, because they don't actually get named in the episode, as far as I'm aware. I had to look it up. You know these guys within the, is that what they're called? Whatever they're called. These three guys that are sort of always guarding it and keep chasing the Mary Rat. I think they're really nicely designed. They're very simple design, but I really like the look of them as well. And I think, again, they're proper creepy, scary, but do absolutely nothing. And it's a shame, actually, because they look great.
They are very scary. And the design is simple. And again, that the design of those guys, it does remind me of Indiana Jones. You know, what was the first Indiana Jones film, or the second one, where it was all about the Nazis?
Yeah.
They have that look about them, if you know what I mean. But they were scary as hell, though, because they wander around like whispering.
Yeah.
These whispers, and they were really creepy.
I really liked the look of them. I really did. I would have liked to have sort of seen them a bit more, because it's quite creepy when they're sort of chasing Clara and Mary. Is it Mary? Mary. And you know, you sort of think they've got, I think because the eyes are just circular and they're sort of dead behind the eyes as well. Just, it gives them quite a creepy aura about them. So, yeah, I like those guys and I liked the mummy. Just would have liked to have seen them do a bit more, really.
Yeah, I'd like to have seen a bit more of a Scooby-Doo-esque type chase between the mummy and like pulling off the mask to see who it really was. I did expect to see the mummy do a bit more, but I guess so like the embodiment of the soul story in monster was so that's the thing. So the planet that's in the middle that all these other little ones, you know, are in orbit around, did the monster just sort of inhabit the planet, or was it always the planet and inhabited the mummy?
Well, again, this is where I got lost. I don't know.
I didn't quite get my head around it. Yeah, either way, I thought it was quite good. I would just like to have seen a slightly more sinister, more horrible design when it was the planet, because it did look like a pumpkin.
It did, and I don't get this thing of it feeding off memories particularly. In all honesty, don't really get that. I prefer the mummy and the Vigil guys as a monster rather than this big pumpkin planet. But
I would like to have seen it a bit more scary looking for me, because it did look a little bit like it's just a Halloween face on a planet. Doesn't really look that menacing, really. I mean, it obviously is, because I think doesn't Mary say that, you know, if he doesn't if this thing doesn't feed off of her, it will consume everybody in this little solar system, and then it will go on to feed from other worlds and stuff. So, you know, it clearly is, you know, quite a threatening thing, but it just didn't come across as immediately threatening, you know.
No, I felt the same, actually. Yeah, didn't really do much of that. One of the other things that was criticized when this went out was the overuse of Matt Sonic screwdriver.
Ah, right. Yep.
And I have to agree with that. I was getting a bit fed up of it. In fact, there's a bit where it's knocked out of his hand and goes flying. And I remember at the time thinking, I kind of hope that's the end of it. Like, we don't, you know, I think we should lose the Sonic for a while. And he does use it for everything.
Yeah.
And I have to agree with that criticism. It's just every time Matt gets that blimmin' Sonic out and he just seems to be able to do everything. Because he's like holding open the door with it in this one. He's holding back the Vigil with it. And mm-hmm. I don't know, it's a bit of a easy get out clause, I think.
Well, that's always a thing that, and do you know what? I'm pretty sure that the writers struggle with that a little bit as well.
Yeah.
Because it's such an easy mechanism to get them out of a situation, isn't it? You just reach for the Sonic. But yeah, it is used a lot. And there's even a couple of scenes where I think on one of the market stores when they want to buy that space scootery thing, Clara says, well, you must have something, you know. And he's like, he gets his Sonic out and he's like, no. And then they do it again later on where they're going to, when they go back to buy the scooter, because they need to get, they really need to get over to the planet because the Mary's over there.
Yeah.
You know, when she gets sort of drawn over in like the gold blob thing around her. And she says it again. It's like a repeat of the conversation where Clara's like, you know, you must have something. And he's like, well, I've got this, but it comes in handy. So, you know, even from there, you know, there's no way they're going to, you know, it's not like a Fifth Doctor story where Sonic gets blown up and that's it. He hasn't got one for ages. Nope.
Yeah.
He's going to firmly keep hold of it because they need it for the get out of jail card, you know, get out of jail free card. So, yeah. But it is used a lot though. You're right. It's used for keeping the very heavy door open, which again, you know, it's a Sonic device. So why would the door appear heavy to him? It's an electronic Sonic device. You know, I'm pretty sure he wouldn't be able to feel the weight of something, you know, because he's got, I'm making sense. I'm not sure.
Yeah. But. Yeah. I'm with you. I just keep thinking back to the War Games when the Doctor, that guy is so impressed that he can actually move a screw up and down with it. And I'm just thinking, yeah, them were the days.
Those,
you know, that guy's like, wow, what is it? It's a Sonic screwdriver. Yeah. And now it can just do absolutely anything. And I just, I don't know. It that was a major problem, I think. Not a major problem, but it was an issue with the Matt Smith era that, you know, the Sonic just, I think Matt just loved the prop as well. And it just seemed to come out all the time. And it was just like, oh, here we go, blimmin' Sonic again. And it just got a bit tiring, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it can look quite good, you know, when he's being quite flash and he's like flipping it round. But it's just the overuse I have to be careful with, I suppose. But interesting enough, there's, I can't remember what series it was or what special feature, but there's an interview with David Tennant. And I have no idea. I can't recall what series it was, what DVD, but on one of the special features, he's been interviewed about the Sonic, and he does say that there were a few stories that were written when he was on the show where he pushed back and said, that's ridiculous.
Really?
Yeah. He said, you can't just have the Sonic, you know, coming to the rescue every time they're in a bit of a pickle. So I think there were a few stories where it was written in that they were in a bit of a jam, and then the Sonic screwdriver just does something to get them out of it, you know.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, let's reprogram it in 3 seconds on the spot, you know, to make this door now open that we couldn't open before. And I think David Tennant was like, I think he's, if I recall, he said to Russell T. Davis, this is ridiculous. You know, we can't always have the Sonic as, you know, the fixer of all things. You know, it's just too convenient. So maybe they should have done that a bit more with Matt Smith's, you know, run. Just not have the Sonic.
I think that's one of those little things that the Moffat doesn't really bother him, doesn't care about that sort of thing. I think he's not really, you know, it's the sort of thing that bothers some fans like me and you, but I don't think it's the sort of thing Russell Stevens too bothered about. So, no, that's fine. You know, just moves the story on, I think, is his sort of way of looking at it. But, yeah.
The mothballs all over the Sonic.
Yes. I mean, I love the Sonic. I just, yeah, just not that much. Yeah. There was an interesting story strand in this that never really got followed through, which is the TARDIS disliking Clara, which I remember really being intrigued by. And I was like, I like this. Now, where's this going? Like, you know, the TARDIS won't let her in at one point, and it even makes a sort of, not a growling noise, but it sort of makes a disapproving, tells her to back off.
Yeah.
And I really liked that because I wanted that to go somewhere, and it never really did, because it pops up again in, is it Hyde? Which is also written by Neil Cross, actually. I think it pops up in that one, but it pops up a couple of times, but we never really get any resolution. I think the mothball came out with some, I think someone asked him about it, and he sort of came out with a reason, but it was never really explicitly explained on screen, I don't think.
No,
from what I remember, anyway.
It's an interesting theory, isn't it? And it has, it has popped up very slightly in other stories about the TARDIS not liking her. And I'm sure there was one story where she's proper shouting at the TARDIS to open up.
I think it's Hyde.
I seem to remember
saying, you know, let me in. I've got to say, And then the next thing you know, she's flying the TARDIS, which is a bit odd.
Yeah.
But so I just thought it was an intriguing thing to do, but they never really sort of executed it. They never really sort of followed it through.
Yeah, I just think they left it down to interpretation, really. I think because she was a very new companion, maybe the TARDIS just wasn't used to her yet and wasn't about to start obeying, you know, orders from a newbie who's new on the scene, if you know what I mean. But yeah, it's an interesting thing that they didn't really explore too much, did they, like you say?
No, I think the mothball said it was something to do with her being in the time stream or something. I can't remember. He came up with some answer for it when he was, you know, challenged on it. But it didn't really make much sense from what I remember.
Yeah. I think it was a question that was asked in the Doctor Who magazine.
Yeah.
If I recall. Yeah. But yeah, the TARDIS is obviously not a fan of Clara at the moment.
No. He doesn't like you. I keep thinking of that.
Oh, crikey. It's not a Star Wars podcast.
No.
And then we have the whole scene at the end. Actually, before we get on to that, I was going to say, we did have, let's talk about this notion of the song.
Yeah.
You know, because I thought it was at the time when I first watched it, I thought this is ridiculous. But then when I think about it after rewatching it, it's quite a nice cultural thing. It's something that's been handed down for, I think the Doctor says it's been a really long time, like 1,000 generations or something. And I thought that was quite nice when I think back about it after rewatching it, that it's because they could have done something a lot simpler, but this was quite nice to have this song, you know, as part of the ritual, I suppose, that they have to go through. And when you couple that with, because some of Murray Gold's music was really nice in this one, I noticed, but it was quite a musical song driven episode, wasn't it? Because they use it as like a Mary starts singing it towards the end as like, you know, backup for the Doctor and so on at the end as well. So I thought that was quite cool. When I first watched it, I was like, this is a bit stupid, but I don't know what you think. It's quite a musical story.
I must admit, the first time I watched it, I thought they'd purposely almost written a story around Murray Gold. I thought, oh, they've done this to really highlight Murray's music, and why not, because Murray's a great composer and stuff. I just, it felt a bit gimmicky to me on the first watch. But I think, like you, I've kind of come around to it a little bit. And one thing I do give credit to this episode for is that I like that they try a new idea with it.
Yes.
I don't know if I think it's 100% successful, but that is one thing I will say about this episode. I like the fact that, particularly on a rewatch yesterday, I did like the fact it was at least different and not that predictable as well. You know what I mean? It's as I said, I think the first time I watched it, I couldn't really understand where it was going. I kept thinking, when's the story going to start? But I like the fact it's just a little bit different. They tried something different. And having the whole music-led thing, although I didn't think it worked the first time I watched it, on a rewatch, I think it was all right. Yeah, I think it was quite good, actually, to some extent.
Mm. Yes, I agree. That was one thing I just wanted to mention, because it is quite a musical story.
Yeah.
The second thing is Matt Smith's speech at the end. So this is one of a sort of collection of nice speeches that Matt Smith, you know, does very well throughout his time. And I thought this was quite a touching one as well, because it's all about his memories and his knowledge and so on. And there's a lovely scene where he's sort of mid-speech and he's bellowing out at this monster and he's got tears sort of down his face. Mm-hmm. And I thought, yeah, this is one of those times where it sort of reinforces the statement that they said earlier, which is also very cool, where Clara assumes that the Doctor's on his way back to the TARDIS just to get the hell out of Dodge. But he turns round and he's like, what does he say? Two things that, you know, one something and then the other one is, we never walk away.
Yeah, I liked that bit. Yeah,
That was really lovely lines there. And at the end, he sort of reinforces that, because he's not going anywhere. He's even sort of sacrificing his own sort of memories and knowledge, you know, to do that. And I thought that was great. Great acting as well from Matt Smith, where he's sort of bellowing out and he does that so well, doesn't he?
Yes, he does.
The whole shouty speech thing. And we have it in our intro, didn't it? The drunken screaming up at the aliens from Stonehenge. But he does it so well.
I thought it was a good speech. Once again, though, I didn't like it at the time. And the reason for that was I was like, it almost felt like, here we go, Matt Smith Doctor doing another shouty speech, because it had been done a couple of times before. Mm. So I didn't really think it much of it at the time, but watching this out of context the rest of the series and just enjoying it for what it is in the actual episode, I thought it was a good speech and brilliantly delivered by Matt in performance as well. So it is a good speech.
It is. Right, let's talk about some cast quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So we have the guy that's over on the other planetoid who's singing back.
Now, I thought he was quite good, actually, because I thought he did actually look quite terrified. Like, he looked like he could not wait to get out of there. And I thought he was quite good, considering he only had this little tiny role.
Uh-huh, yeah, Chris Anderson.
Mm.
He genuinely looked terrified.
Yeah, I thought he was giving a good little performance, yeah.
Yeah, and totally locked into, like, the belief system about this God thing, because even when the Doctor's talking to him, he's still singing. And it's quite funny when the Doctor's like, he's coming anyway, so song's up, you know, time's up sort of thing. And he's, you know, he's crying as well, and, you know, he does the off, doesn't he? But I thought he was quite a good little character.
Yeah.
We have the guy playing the mummy, Aidan Cook, who just was going for it when he's inside the cabinet.
He does go for it, yeah.
So the direction there must have just been go nuts. just be as scary as you can. And just go nuts, because we want people to believe that any second he could break out and sort of strangle them, which he didn't really do, did he? He just sort of sat back and...
What does he do, actually?
Well,
he breaks the glass. Does he actually get out, or does he just... I can't remember what actually happens to him.
He just slumps back in his chair.
Does he?
On his throne, and then you just see this light come out of the pyramid, so he's gone up into the planet.
Right, that's it, yeah.
So he was pretty good, though. The little girl... Mary, played by Amelia Jones.
Yeah. Thought she was good, actually.
I thought she was very good, because there were two scenes which I really liked of her. The opening scene where she's running away from the other, from the people who are sort of getting her ready to do the song, and she's scared that she's going to get it wrong, so she's running away. And Clara catches up to her and had that nice little scene. She's genuinely scared and terrified. And then I like the scene towards the end where the Doctor's over giving his speech and they're on the other one and she has this sort of look of determination in her face. You know, she's no longer scared of anything. And she's like, I want to help him. And she starts singing. And when she's done, she's got this sort of nice little smile on her face. So I like that transition, that progression from like the scared little girl to now the sort of, you know, I'm not scared anymore. You know, I'm going to do this to help. And
yeah,
which is all good. So, yeah, liked her. Do you reckon she's...
No, I thought she was good. And I like the fact that it takes a long time for her to trust the doctor and Clara. Like, you know, very often in these stories, as soon as they meet up, we just sort of almost become instantly friends and everything's great. And come on, we're on an adventure together. I like the fact that she's just so untrusting until right to the end when she says to the doctor, but you promised. And it was like, and he's like, oh, yeah, I did, didn't I? And I thought she was gave a great performance in this. And yeah, she was good casting for that particular role because I don't know if it was her singing. I doubt it. But she does it quite well. I mean, in some way, she's better at mouthing the words than the other guy, even though he was good. But no, she's a good little performance from her. What was her name? Amelia Jones.
Amelia Jones, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. No, she did well, I thought. She's good in the scenes with Clara as well. She's sort of quite a strong character, I thought, in terms of that. You know, she holds her own against Clara, is what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah. Very good.
Very good.
And we've spoken about Clara's parents.
Yeah, Dad's not that great. Well, he's okay. He's nothing wrong with him, but he's not going to win any BAFTAs, I wouldn't say, Dad. But then again, he's only in, you know, he's probably just a bit part actor. He's only in it for a minute or two.
Yeah.
So you know, they're not going to get anyone majoring for that. But the mum was all right, wasn't she?
Yeah, I thought she was good, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Clara.
Jenna Louise Coleman.
Jenna Louise, as she was known.
When did she drop the Louise?
I think when...
Capaldi.
I think it was the series after this one, so... which was Capaldi, no.
Yeah, it was.
So, yeah, it was, yeah. So I think when Capaldi...
When, all right.
Yeah, I think that's when she dropped it.
Yeah. I wasn't really a massive fan of Clara in this one. I don't really like Series 7 Clara, but I have to give her a bit of slack because it is only her sort of... It's very early on in her stint as Clara. So she's not bad by any stretch of imagination. She's still giving a fairly decent performance. But I just find the character quite annoyingly written. It's not really Jenna's fault. I just don't like the way they write Clara a lot of the time to be in the early stages because she's sort of quite cocky and she's very sort of brazen when she talks to the doctor and, you know, I'm doing this. And I just find her a bit of a spoiled brat in her sort of Series 7. So not really nothing wrong with Jenna's performance particularly, but I just didn't really like the way Clara was written at this point. Particularly, but I think she's good in the scenes with the little girl. There is a nice connection between her, between Clara and Mary, and you get the feeling that Clara's definitely sort of, you know, got her back and looking out for her, and that's quite nice. And Jenna does that very well, so no real complaints, I suppose. But yeah, just not a fan of Series 7 Clara, really.
Yeah, I totally agree. Yeah, she's okay, and her best scenes are where she's sort of playing mummy to the little girl.
Yeah,
and the Doctor.
The big guy, Mr. Matt Smith.
Yep.
Matt Smith.
Very good. Really, really good. And yeah, it's sort of, I don't know, it's just, even in Series 7, he's just such a great performance from him, even in the smallest of little scenes. Like the bit where he's tickling Doreen under the chin and...
Yeah.
He's sitting in the crowd watching Mary about to sing and he's like pushing his glasses up. And
I think he's one of the few people that could pull off wearing those glasses as well because they do suit him, but they would look ridiculous on a lot of people.
even those little bits where the focus is not necessarily on him, but he's just totally in it. You know, he's just the Doctor. He's at this point now where, yeah, in his sleep, he's the Doctor. Just great as always. And culminating with that scene, which not his best speech, I would say, but certainly, you know, quite impressive to watch. And he's very emotional and he's putting himself, you know, everything into it. So, yeah, really like Matt Smith as always.
Yeah, I thought Matt was great in it. I think perhaps if you'd have asked me before I rewatched it, I'd probably said, oh, he carries the episode. Not so much the case on a rewatch. I do think he's just genuinely good in it. The episode's slightly better than I thought. But yeah, no complaints on Matt. Are those Amy's glasses that he's wearing? I've kind of got confused now. Anyway, but yeah, Matt Smith, very good. Just if he could just tone down the Sonic in this series, it'd be be good. But no complaints from him. He always gives quite a good performance, I thought. He's good with the humour, isn't he? He does the humour and the action quite well. He's quite sort of subtle with his humour. And, you know, yeah, I just can't fault Matt, really. I like him.
It's great. Is there anything you want to mention before we get on to scores?
No, I think we've pretty much covered it. The only thing is, I've completely forgotten that Matt has a sort of different outfit in this series. I always think of Matt in the tweed with the bow tie, and I know it's just a small thing, but yesterday I was thinking, I cannot make up my mind if I like the long coat or not.
I think I do.
I don't know, it's just I associate Matt with the tweed, and I associate Ten with the sort of long coat and suit. So I don't know. I always find it strange seeing Matt in that. But no, yeah, all good. I think we pretty much covered it.
Right. Scores. It's you to go first.
Me to go first. I'm giving this a 5.5 out of 10.
5.5,
which I think, I'm just going to look back, is what I gave... what did we review recently? The... Lazarus Experiment.
I gave that
5.5. Yeah. So I'm kind of putting it on par with that.
Oh, really?
I suppose.
Right, okay.
Maybe it's better, but yeah.
No worries, mate. I'm going to give this a 7.
7? Okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like I said at the beginning, I really enjoyed it watching this. But I think because such a long time has gone in between me watching it from when it went out on TV.
Yeah.
To now. Maybe I've just watched it again from a different pair of eyes, if you like.
Yeah.
So yeah, 5.5 and a 7.
Which is not bad, actually, because if you'd have asked me before I'd rewatched it, I probably would have said 3. So it's definitely gone up quite a bit since the rewatch. And also, I'm quite pleased to say this, it's gone from an episode that I was dreading watching, would never have put the box set on to watch. I would never have put this episode on if we weren't reviewing it, I don't think. So it's gone from that to being an episode that I'd quite happily sit and watch.
Yes.
I don't think it's great, but I'd quite happily sit there and watch it. So that is good, yeah.
Indeed, right. We had a load of thoughts in on this one.
Oh, good.
We got 6 audio clips. We got a load of tweets and a load of Facebook messages. So let's
let's get into it.
Get through it. We're going to do a couple of audio clips first. We're going to play a couple back-to-back. We're going to play Alex Kingdom, followed by Owen Daly. So let's kick off with the audio.
Hello, Gary Annam from the Igloo Box Podcast. Hi, I'm really happy because my competition package came through the post. Thank you guys all so much for the opportunity, and thank you guys for being so awesome as you do. I'm currently filming an unboxing video of it on my YouTube channel, along with wearing the t-shirt, yes. I will probably put a link to my channel in the email if you want to check that out, because, yeah, I'm going to have a bit of fun with it. Anyway, The Rings of Aka 10. Everyone hates this story. Why? It's great. It really feels like a classic story for me, this one. As you experience how it's just aliens, boom, it's like a new reset. You just see what Doctor Who can do. And yes, the whole Mary Galel story is a bit bland here and there, you know, with her. They like her to sing the song. But she's a little kid. She has to go out in front of all these people and sing a song for a god, okay? I'm sorry, I could barely go and sing to my granddad without going, oh, beep, I might screw this up. Yeah, I really liked the speech as well at the end when Matt Smith is great. It made me cry and still makes me well up today. I just cannot get enough of the story. Also, the whole, the long song. I love that so much. I can never get enough of Matt Smith. Clara's alright. I'm going to give it a 9 out of 10. I really love this one. One of my favourites all time. See you guys next week. Hopefully.
A very good mood that Alex is in.
Yeah, I look forward to seeing the unboxing vid.
Right, we're going to crack straight on with Owen Daly.
Hi Gary and Adam, hope you're both well and enjoying the show this week. So the Rings of Akaten, episode 2 of series 7 part B, and no, I don't enjoy this one bit. I find it really draggy and boring, but I'm going to put that aside because I'm pretty sure it's, yeah, that's all I have to say really. It's just a really boring, slow episode, and it doesn't really do much for the series for me. I don't think it adds anything new to the table, but yeah, I'm just not a fan of this. However, I do like the special effects, the prosthetic department in this, with loads of new great aliens being created, which was always great to see. But I don't think the casting in this was very good. I don't like the little girl who plays Mary. I think she's a good child actor, but still not very good at acting. But that said, the music in this is very good, especially the singing part. I do like that bit with the Doctor's heroic speech, but I don't think the grandfather planet or sentient gas, whatever the hell that thing was, I think that's really, really stupid. I don't understand this story one bit, and I'm not sure how it got past production, as it's dragged, doesn't have really any great plot, and I just struggle to watch it. So Rings of Akaten, 4 out of 10.
Oh dear.
Yeah, I kind of know where he's coming from. I think I felt a bit like that before a rewatch. I remember thinking, how did this get through production without another rewrite? Because I think it does take a long time to get going. I kept thinking they needed something going on here. So I do know where he's coming from with some of that.
Mm. Yeah. Okay, over on Twitter, Michael Herbert says, it's terrible. Mind you, it's still better than Time Flight or The Warriors of the Deep.
Warriors of the Deep. That's one we haven't done yet. Yeah.
Daniel Fox says, one of Series 7's best. A hidden gem, and the speech at the end with Murray Girl's music is a highlight. 8.5 out of 10.
Ooh.
Over on Facebook, let's do another audio clip before we get into Facebook. This is from Who Addicts Reviews, Matt Rowney.
Hi there, Gary and Adam. I hope you two are well. Now, The Rings of Akaten, I might be one of the only people who actually stands up for this story, because I think it's really underrated. Now, not underrated in the fact that people think it's good and I think it's great, or people think it's not too bad and I think it's one of the best ever. Not underrated like that, but underrated in the fact that a lot of people claim that this is one of the worst stories of all time. In the 50th year's Doctor Who DWM episode ranking thing they did a few years ago, people ranked it in the bottom 5, which for me is just bewildering. I think The Rings of Akaten, yes, it's not got the highest budget, yes, it's not got the deepest timey-wimey story, but I think it's just a beautiful watch. I think it's a really enjoyable watch, and I think it really highlights what Doctor Who's all about, because it's a true sci-fi. The Doctor and Clara just land on a random planet, and there's just aliens everywhere, and we get to see into their culture. We get to see them at this festival where they trade gifts. There's loads of... It felt a lot like the end of the world, actually. Another second episode of A Companion's Tenure. It felt very much like that. Although the prosthetics for some of the animals looked a little bit strange at times, I thought it was just really, really interesting just to see them all. It felt like Doctor Who was going back to being a true sci-fi instead of a comedy soap opera drama that it can be sometimes. I thought there were some beautiful scenes, especially with the music and the singing, although people might find it cringy. Again, I thought it was something really different, a great look into a different alien culture. And yeah, the whole thing about Clara's leaf giving away memories I thought was quite clever. And the speech Matt Smith gave was one of his best. So maybe I'm in the minority here. Maybe a lot of people hate the idea, hate the story, hate the songs and think it's cringy. But I'm a sucker for it. I think it's just really different. It's a different sort of Doctor episode and one that I really enjoy. So it didn't blow me away, but I'm going to give it a strong 7 out of 10.
7.
7 out of 10, yes.
7.
7. Yeah, I knew Matt was going to stick up for this one. I know he's always said it's better than its reputation. Yeah.
Yes. Let's do another audio. This is, I think this is the first time Chris has sent one in. So let's listen to Chris Law.
Hello, Gary and Adam. I hope you're enjoying the podcast. The Rings of Akaten. I haven't seen this episode since it aired. I really didn't enjoy it first time round, and it didn't get much better for me this time round either. Without a doubt, it's a filler episode. The leaf concept is a little bit ridiculous. It just shows that Clara was just a plot device in this series, and was not an established character, but I think we all know who's to blame for that. Some of the CGI looked rather dodgy as well. The aliens in the arena and the moped scene especially. The prosthetics on some of the aliens did look quite good though. It was a bit Mos Eisley. Would have been nice to see some familiar faces though. Everybody loves a good ood. The one scene that really irritated me was when the doctor was holding the door open and he kept on saying how it was a really, really heavy door. And then when he let go, it closed remarkably slowly for a remarkably heavy door. Clara, I think she was quite irritating. It's only the second episode of her series. I just couldn't connect with her at all. And she's almost patronising. Matt Smith, brilliant as the Doctor. His costume looks great. I absolutely love it. It really suits him. And for me, it's better than the tweed. His speech, great. That's the most memorable thing about this episode, is his speech. Overall, a mediocre story. Neil Cross obviously wrote this one and Hyde, and I didn't enjoy either of them particularly. So overall, 5 out of 10, and see you guys next week.
Thank you very much, Chris.
Yes, I agree with a lot of that, I have to say.
Yep, some more interesting points there. Right, let's jump over to Facebook. Greg Toby, I love this episode. It's probably the only episode from Series 7 that I actually enjoy.
Really?
Yep. The plot makes sense, the atmosphere of it all is very captivating, and the concepts are solid. He goes on to say, I especially love that there is a Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy reference made in the episode when Big Chin Bowtie mentions the Hulavu in passing, which is in Hitchhiker's Guide in an intelligent shade of the colour blue.
Now, I love Hitchhikers, and even I didn't spot that.
I concur. I love it, and I didn't spot it either, so well done, Greg.
Yeah.
Overall, really nice episode, which you can stick on when you've had a horrible day. Always makes me feel cheerful again. 8 out of 10. Thank you very much. Jeff Waddle says, I don't get why this is so disliked. It's one of the highlights of a very poor season 7 for me. Different, but there's nothing wrong with that. If there was one criticism, is that there's a lot of races of aliens that weren't needed, i.e. the guards, who looked interesting but immediately died. Great speech, and I don't know why everyone gets hung up on the planet Sung being alive or the science being wrong. I'd happily watch this over most of Season 7, 8 out of 10.
That does surprise me. I'd have put money on Jeff Slay in this one. So, yeah, interesting, Jeff.
Sammy Satine says, okay, so the Doctor takes Clara to Akaten, which apparently is where he took Susan. I would have liked to have seen that episode anyway. So we meet the Queen of Years, who seems like a lovely young girl called Mary, whom the people have chosen to sacrifice to a vampiric son. I like the story, and it's wonderful to see an alien planet with some aliens who actually look like aliens. It's also nice to see Clara's parents in one of their rare appearances. One thing that makes my blood boil, bloody Moffat. If this had just been a story about Clara and the Doctor going to an alien planet and saving a day without the added Impossible Girl story arc, it would have been a whole lot better. I rate the story 6 out of 10. Would have rated it higher without the story arc, like an 8 or a 9.
If Sammy ever meets the Moff, I think she's just going to batter him. She's not a fan of the Moff at the moment.
Right, more audio. This is our good friend Louise from Loopy Lou Land.
Hello. Right, I really don't like Series 7. There's only really one good episode, and that's Nightmare in Silver. And I'm pretty sure that's mainly because of the character Porridge, Warwick Davis's character. Anyway, I didn't think I would enjoy this on rewatch, but it's really quite lovely. I like the music, and I actually really like Clara in this episode, not being the biggest Clara fan. Matt was wonderful on that famous speech. I'll give it 5.5 out of 10.
Adam, you've regaled in...
I've just had to pick myself up off the floor. Nightmare in Silver? Oh, I'm not going to... We haven't reviewed it yet. I can't say too much, but... Nightmare in Silver?
Oh, dear.
Anyway, oh, my goodness. Lou, you know I love you, but... Nightmare in Silver? Anyway...
Anyway, while Adam's recovering, Lewis Palmer, I have mixed feelings on this. demonstrate some excellent world building. All of the races that we see in this feel like they have been there for ages and have history. Almost feels like Star Wars. A lived-in world with rich history. It does have some good monsters, but as well, I feel there's nothing much happens. And what little does doesn't have a lot of stakes. We have really stupid things like Oh My Stars thing, which really feels forced and unnatural. The whole Sonic stopping psychic attacks thing really annoys me. And this is the height of the awful days of the Sonic doing everything. Mm-hmm. The speech at the end is a highlight of Matt's era, and his performance is astounding. However, as good as it is, that speech almost feels unprovoked and only feels like it's there to have a big speech. Mm. Overall, a mixed bag for sure, but not without some excellent points. 5 out of 10.
Cheers, Lewis.
Mark Atkinson. Well, it started off well and then went downhill fast. The space bike scenes have to be one of the worst the new show has ever put on the screen. Simply dreadful effects and some just dodgy in the extreme. This episode held much promise but fell hard and fast. So it's a 5 out of 10 from me.
Cheers, Mark.
George Coppen. This one so dull, wasted, boring story. Sorry, let me start that again. This one was so dull, wasted villain, boring storyline. Enough said, 4 out of 10.
Oh, dear. Oh dear. Cheers, George.
Miles McKenzie, this is a very enjoyable watch for me. Series 7 highlight and a very underrated episode. Clara's first story, as she was probably at her best for Series 7. The Parasite was an all right villain, but maybe it did something more menacing. It would be better. Overall, a lovely little story, 8.5.
Ah, nice one. Okay.
Ollie Cowley, I quite liked it actually. Along with Cold War, it's one of the best of Series 7.
Mm.
Yeah, Charlie Turner. Hello, the Big Blue Box Podcast. I'm going to be honest with my thoughts here. As Matt Smith is my second favourite Doctor of all time, despite the bad episodes he's mostly had, but his performance more than makes up for them. This episode is so underrated. I like this one a lot, particularly when Matt Smith delivers his speech and the long song playing. It really moved me. Almost brings a tear to my eye whenever I listen to it. Anyway, going off topic, next thing I want to point out here, but in the crowd of aliens, I spotted what's called a shade from a show, which I used to watch before it got cancelled. It was called Mission 2110. It's basically the creature with the glowing red robotic type eyes. If you don't know which creature it is, overall, Rings of Akaten is an episode I enjoy, which may surprise you. It's one of my favourites. 9 out of 10.
I need to go back and have a look at all them creatures because they must have put loads in that. You know, I wonder if they did a George Lucas and hid an ET in there or anything like that.
Yeah, possibly. Dean Jones. For me, the Rings of Akaten is the best story of Series 7. The world that Neil Cross presents to us is fascinating, from the various creatures to the way things work, offerings with sentimental value, etc. Clara is given character development and more of a personality on screen. Matt Smith gives one of his best performances as the Doctor with a cracking speech towards the end. It does take some time for the plot to kick in, and the Sonic is a bit too overused, but other than that, it's a great one and people should revisit. 8 out of 10.
Cheers, Dean.
Yeah. A last audio clip. This is Joe Sweeney.
Hello, Big Blue Box. Hope you guys are well. The Rings of Akaten, for me, is quite a good story out of the second half of Series 7. It was easy enough to follow. The concept was okay. It's quite an enjoyable watch. It is good that we managed to get a character development out of Clara at the beginning. The episode I found was quite adventurous. The pacing was quite fair. Matt and Jenna's performance was quite good. I'm actually warming to Clara a lot in this episode. The monster in the glass chamber was very, very scary, including the guards. But what I did not find terrifying was the planet or the sun. It just looked really dull. But I thought the Doctor's speech about the Time War was fantastic, and how the planet was taking away all the Doctor's memories and all the energy coming from the Doctor, make it look like they was... We make it look like he was regenerating. But I do wish they just ease off the story arc, because I did feel it was dragging on a little bit, really. Overall, good episode. Not too shabby, really. So I'll give a score of them a 7.5. Hope you enjoyed the podcast, guys. Speak soon. Take care. Bye-bye for now.
Thank you very much,
Joe. That's fair enough, yeah.
That's a good point, sir, again. Last couple on Facebook. Joseph Howarth says, my God, where do I start with this one? It's quite simply a stupid episode. I mean, seriously, the whole episode is just about the Doctor and Clara trying to help this race whose sole purpose is to sing crappy songs. And that's it. There's nothing here. There are no monsters, no action, no excitement or fun to be had. No nothing. Okay, I'll say it looks visually pleasing. There's some character development for Clara. And there is that speech that the Doctor says at the end, although that seems to be the only thing he can do in the later portion of Series 7. And bearing in mind, I've never seen any of Matt Smith's episode except The 11th Hour when they initially aired. Watching it now makes me wonder why in God's name did they even make this episode in the first place?
Oh dear.
Although the concept of a planet drawing from emotions is very interesting, it's a good idea on paper. I really thought they could have done a lot more with the concept instead of just making this episode out to be a sci-fi version of Songs of Praise. There are some interesting ideas here and there. Some nice set pieces, but there just isn't anything from saving this episode from being dull, horrendously dull. So it's a 4 out of 10.
Dear me, not a fan.
Not a fan. Lastly on Facebook, Adam Bryden says, a very, very underrated episode. The plot was good, the singing moved me, and just all round a good episode, 8.5.
Ooh.
P.S. Love the show. Any chance of a Who Addicts crossover?
Oh, that could be fun.
Maybe.
Yeah, maybe. It's nearly happened, actually.
It nearly did, one day.
It nearly happened.
Wonder. Anything on the Geek's Handbag Facebook
page? Yes, and a couple on the Geek's Handbag. Callum Johnson says the music was good, so perhaps Callum's a fan of Songs of Praise, I don't know. But yeah, he liked the music. Lee Collins said a very poor story and just didn't do it for him. Sorry. Fair enough, Lee. Adam Time Lord Fishwick says an episode which he absolutely loves. It's so underrated. And Rob Perslow says probably one of my favourites of Series 7. Few people have said that, haven't they? Just overall a very heartfelt story which proved that powerful memories of whatever kind can overcome and beat monsters which someone, in this case the Doctor and Clara, is facing. Do you know, I think this might be the most mixed bag of comments we've had. It's really been up and down, isn't it?
Yes.
They've either really thought it was rubbish or they've really said it was underrated and liked it.
I would say it's one of the most Marmite episodes that we've done because, yeah, there's no middle ground, really. Well, I say middle ground, the scores have been middle-ish ground, but a lot of people have said, you know, it's one of their favourites.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. And then some people have been like, well, it's one of the worst. How could we possibly sit through it? So, really interesting views from you guys. Really good.
Yeah, it's really surprising when they started coming in as well, because when we put this on the schedule, I thought, oh, this is gonna get slayed. And I was really shocked when I saw most of the early comments that came in were positive. Mm-hmm. And I was sitting there thinking, really? You know, because like I said, I didn't want to watch it. And so it's a real, like you said, Marmite episode, yeah.
Indeed.
Divisive is the word I was looking for but couldn't find.
Yes.
So I went with Marmite.
Yes, right. next week is Classic Week.
And
dude, what are we going to do for next week?
Next week, Fifth Doctor story, The Awakening. It's the one with the big face, isn't it?
The very big old face.
Yeah. The Awakening.
The big old face, yes. So the TARDIS team of the Doctor, Tegan and Turlough are looking at big faces.
In walls, in church walls.
Yeah. So if you haven't seen this one yet, guys, get it on, get it watched, get it rewatched, whatever you like, because we need to have your thoughts and opinions. Because that is the best part of the show, as you know.
I'm chuckling because at the minute, the only thing I can remember from it is this thing being sick down the TARDIS wall. I'm thinking, can't remember why or what that's about. So, yeah, I'm quite looking forward to giving this a rewatch.
Yeah, me too, actually. I haven't seen this one in ages.
No, nor have I.
Right, so The Awakening will be happening next week. And I think we'll do there for 111.
Okay.
Thank you. Thank you for sticking with us and listening through episode 111. Some really good news bits. Remember to get your stamped address envelopes over to the DWAS if you want to go to Polarity Day. It is imperative, if you want to go, that you do that process. You cannot email or call or anything like that. You have to do it the old-fashioned way. So remember to do that if you want to go. Does sound like a very good day.
It does indeed.
Yes. Also, congrats to Real SFX and Milk VFX for scooping the BAFTA Kimmer Award. Very cool.
Well done, guys.
Yes. And thank you to you guys for sending in all your clips and thoughts and stuff. It's really cool. So remember to send them in next week. Look out for the post on Facebook and Twitter about The Awakening, Fifth Doctor story. You're good. Head over to our website, www.bigblueboxpodcast.com. You can listen to all of the previous episodes on there. Plus, you can link off to Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all that stuff. And also on the website is big buttons so that you can subscribe in iTunes so that you never miss an episode. And to all of our listeners out there who listen on iTunes and subscribe, thank you so much. And if you haven't yet, if you could give us a rating and a review on there, that would be awesome because that helps us out a lot. Also, check out Adam's channel for the second time this episode.
Get the name right.
The Geek's Handbag.
That's the one.
Look for The Geek's Handbag on YouTube and Facebook and Twitter as well, actually.
I'm everywhere.
And you can follow Adam and his crazy adventures in unboxing various toys and collectibles and reviews and all that stuff. On a serious note, it's a great, great channel. Really good videos, so head over and give him a like and a subscribe and all that lot. Yes.
I'll pay you later.
Concentrating on there. Make sure I got it all
right.
Yeah, so thank you guys for listening. It's been really great. A load of new listeners over the last couple of weeks, which is great. We had a big jump up, which is excellent. So welcome aboard the TARDIS. Great to have you aboard. Looking forward to doing all the stuff next week with you guys. So until then, my name's Gary.
My name's Adam.
And remember,
Lundy!